How many of you recognize this behind me? It's called 1975 in prophecy. And how many of you that raised your hands read it? A number of you. This booklet was written by Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong in 1954. And it was copyrighted by the Radio Church of God before the church as we knew it was called the Worldwide Church of God. I never read this booklet. I never saw it. There was a PDF that I was able to locate of the booklet. I scanned through it. I didn't read it word for word. Kind of tried to understand the flow and the concepts. But this booklet was written at a time when the church was new, in a sense, in understanding prophecy. And when you read this article, very exciting to read about the prophecies that we were beginning to understand. Mr. Armstrong believed at the time that, based on the timeline of prophetic events, that the church had entered into two 19-year time cycles that would lead up to the Great Tribulation. The last one beginning in early 1953 when he first went on Radio Luxembourg. And that 19-year time cycle then would take us to 1972 when potentially the Great Tribulation would begin. And that meant in 1975, it was reasonable to think that Christ would return. Well, 1975 came and went. Christ didn't return. He didn't return. This particular booklet was written in a time when people would have been interested. What's going on in this world? We had a Cold War going on. Two nations had so many nuclear weapons, the United States and the Soviet Union, they could have destroyed the world many hundreds of times over. Still could. Wouldn't it seem to reason that people might be concerned and interested in finding out what was going on, what was happening in the times, and then they come across this? Wouldn't it seem exciting if you were learning about prophecy, talking about a gift, a talent that God had given the church, to start to understand some of these prophecies in the Bible that talk about this earth, what was going to happen, the times and the seasons leading to the end when there's a fabulous story of Jesus Christ returning? It's not a surprise that we would be excited to try to figure that out. Now, one thing we have to understand is that when this was written, there was no exact date set. Mr. Armstrong was not saying this is the day or the hour, but we felt we could kind of get within an area, a zone. You won't find this book other than if you booklet typically, unless you go out on the internet and search. It's not really one that we herald a lot in the archives, not because a lot of the prophecies that we understand and they aren't true, they are. It's just that we learned a lesson. We were young in the church in terms of understanding prophecy. We were enthusiastic, maybe a little overly enthusiastic, and even Mr. Armstrong himself said many years later that he had learned himself that it wasn't really valuable to set time frames. As in Matthew 24, we won't turn there yet, it says no man knows the hour when Christ will return. We'll read that later. So we learn that. That's a consequence sometimes when you learn something. But what happened after 1975 to the church? You see, back in the 1950s and 60s and 70s, even on into the 80s, God called many, many people. Many people came into the Church of God. By the time we culminated into the 1990s, we had 150 to 200,000 people in the worldwide Church of God. How many of you were a part of that group? Where did they all go? Where did they all go? Many of those people were called in the 50s, in the 60s, in the 70s. Many of you came in the church at that time. My parents came in 1969, I believe. But God had been working with them prior. Perhaps something happened. Let's go to Matthew chapter 24. It's easy to look back and say, you know, we were a bit immature at the time. We put some dates. We had some lessons to learn. But sometimes once we learn those lessons, there can be an opposite reaction. Because perhaps part of the reason many people were attracted to the Church of God was this. Was this. Because where did all the 150 to 200,000 people go? Why did they leave? What changed? What lost its luster in the church? Why didn't the church mean anything anymore? Why would you leave? Well, maybe this had a part to do with it. In verse 48 of Matthew 24, Jesus said, talking about the time leading up to the great tribulation, "But if that evil servant says in his heart, 'My master is delaying his coming,' and begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunkards," to get out in the world, to think, you know what? Where is Jesus Christ? He didn't come in 1975. Where is he? He didn't come in 1980. It didn't happen in 85, 90. Where is he? Maybe he delays his coming. And maybe people began to lose a sense of urgency. Because one thing we've always preached in the church, if indeed we believe we live in times that are challenging, times that we would even call the end times, one of the things we have taught is the importance of having a sense of urgency. An urgency to get ready for the time when Christ will return. To prepare, to grow, to not let the world around us overtake us. To stay strong in the Spirit. To have a sense of urgency, to watch the world around us. To not get drug into it. And to be ready. You know, I had the opportunity to have 4 very young ladies at my table this morning for brunch. My oldest daughter, Emmy, and then whom I call the three amigas. Ella, my daughter, my younger daughter, Celia Witt, and Sophie Kasalik. And I asked them the question, I said, "I know you're not going to set a date because we don't teach and I'm not asking that, but I said, when do you think Christ will return?" Oh boy, did we talk. 2 of them said, "You know, I think it'll be after my kids are adults." Interesting. Where did that come from? They all acknowledged we don't know. We had a very good conversation. All of them contributed. We don't know exactly when, but does he delay his coming? The title of my message is "Having a Sense of Urgency, Does Jesus Delay His Coming?" Do we have a sense of urgency? Or do we feel like perhaps Christ delays his coming because we don't know? Time goes on and on and on. In fact, maybe even back in the day in the early church, they thought he was coming imminently. How long is this thing going to really go on? 10 years? 100 years? 1,000 years? When does he come back? Do you have a sense of urgency that perhaps it could be soon? Perhaps things could happen. Things could accelerate in the world. Does the Bible make a case for that? Is that a biblical concept? We'll examine that today. Let's look at this in the context of the end times and our perspective of where we are at. Don't worry. No dates will be given. No wild speculation. We'll just read in the Bible. The genesis of this message, and it's the first of a few that I want to give on the topic, actually didn't come from me. It came from a conversation that I had with a young person, and I call the person younger because they're quite a bit younger than me, but a baptized adult a millennial. We'll leave it at that. But I was having a very good conversation with this individual, and he brought up, I wonder sometimes if my generation has enough of a sense of urgency. We talked about that. I told him, I said, well, I asked that about my generation. I asked that about me. I would think even all of you with gray hair who aren't in that millennial generation, perhaps, would ask that about yourself. Because don't we all want a sense of urgency? To feel the importance in the need to grow and prepare, to be engaged in the fight against this world, but to be preparing for the time that Christ returns? We all want that. So even if we don't have enough of it, we know we should seek more of it. A sense of urgency. Let's go to Matthew chapter 24. Where do we really find the concept introduced to us? Well, it really got introduced at the time not long before the death of Christ. Because in Matthew 24, in verse 1, and this is called the Olivet Prophecy. We're familiar with it, but let's read it in this context today. In verse 1, it says, then Jesus went out and departed from the temple, and his disciples came up to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said to them, do you not see all these things? Assuredly, I say to you, not one stone shall be left here upon another that shall not be thrown down. Wow. Jesus said to his disciples not long before he died, he said, you see this temple? That was the second temple. He said, guess what? Things are going to get so crazy around this place that not one stone will be left. How do you think they felt, the disciples? Do you think they felt a little sense of what? Whoa, what's going to happen? What's going to go on? So it says in verse 3, now as he sat on the Mount of Olives, which sits adjacent to the temple. You could see the Temple Mount in the area there from the Mount of Olives. As he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, tell us when will these things be? When's the temple going to go down? When will it happen? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? What will we need to know when you're coming and it's going to be the end of the age, this age? Big question. Don't you want to know the answer? When is he coming? How long will it get delayed? Wouldn't we want him to come back now if we had our way? Of course. But we don't know when. Verse 4. And Jesus answered and said to them, take heed that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and will deceive many. So Jesus says, here's some signs. Here's where you will know that I will be returning. Some will come, they will deceive. They'll say, I'm the Christ. I am Christ, and will deceive many. And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. That's when you'll know we're getting closer. See that you are not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. We hear of wars and rumors of wars all the time. More wars fought in the 20th century than all the centuries previous. We all know that statistic, that fact. But yet, the end is not here. When does he come? Verse 7, for nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places. Now we know the Bible prophesies of a time of the great tribulation when this will get severe. But when will that time come? It says in verse 8, all these are the beginning of sorrows. These are the beginning of the end. The beginning of sorrows. When you see these things, it's the beginning of that end, that end times. Did these disciples who became apostles, did they ever see these things? Did they see in their lifetime these things? Did they experience these things that would be termed the beginning of sorrows? Verse 9, Jesus went on. He said, then as a part of all this, they're going to deliver you up to tribulation and kill you. It gets worse. You'll be killed. And you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will be offended, will betray one another, and will hate one another. It'll get so bad that they'll end up killing you. And even some of you will betray one another. You'll turn on one another. That's how bad it'll get. Verse 11, then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many, and because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. We'll live in a world where it's loveless. It's lawless. There's not people that subscribe to any order and decency. That's going to be the world around you. Verse 13, but he who endures to the end shall be saved. And finally, in verse 14, something happens when they go through all this. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations, and then the end will come. Interesting where Jesus inserts that. He describes the end times, starting with the beginning of sorrows, when it starts. But he says, when that's all going on, I'm imploring you to endure to the end, and the gospel will be preached. The message will go out to this world, to all the world. You know, when Jesus uses the term the end of the age in verse 3, that phrase is used 6 times in the New Testament. Only 6. 5 of them are in the book of Matthew, this being one. Let's go to Hebrews 9. In Hebrews 9 is the only other place this exact phrase is used. It's an interesting verse. Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 26. Jumping into the thought, it says, he, referring to Christ, then would have had to suffer often since the foundation of the world, but now, once at the end of the ages, he has appeared to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. When the apostles were inspired to write, we believe the apostle Paul wrote the book of Hebrews. When they wrote, they believed actually that the end of the ages was a time they lived in. It was a time when Jesus came and gave his life. In their world, that's when it started. That's when it started. The end of the ages. The end times. That's when it started. You know, I asked the 4 young ladies at the table this morning, when are the end times? Do we live in them? Had another very interesting discussion. They had a lot of opinions, a lot of thoughts. But they generally agreed that to them the end times is the very end. They described it almost in terms of the Great Tribulation, when it gets really, really bad right before Christ returns. And that indeed is a part of the end times. There is no doubt. It's the end of the end times. It's the final part before we go in to the Great Tribulation. Then we actually, the world experiences that and Christ returns, or no flesh would be saved alive. But the ones who wrote in the New Testament, the apostles, what we read today, they believed that the end times had begun then. Is that a possibility? Did you ever ask yourself that question? Could have the end times began then? It's been 2,000 years, so if they did begin then, it's been a long, long time. Though remember, God counts 1,000 years as a day. How fast does a day pass in your life? So if a day passes pretty fast in our lives, pretty much it's a blink, right? Well, to God, that's 1,000 years of our years. An analogy he draws. What does the beginning of sorrows, or excuse me, when does the beginning of sorrows really begin? Ever ask yourself that question? I know we ask ourselves, we read this on occasion, when does the beginning of sorrows really begin? Has it really begun? Are we truly in the end times? You might say these are rhetorical questions because maybe you've believed ever since you were called that we are in the end times. When did they begin? Let's go to 2 Timothy. The book of 2 Timothy goes a long way in answering this. 2 Timothy. Paul wrote the book of 2 Timothy. It was a letter that he wrote to a young man who had become quite a good friend of his. His name was Timothy. And he had already written a letter to Timothy many years before. This was a second letter he wrote, 2 Timothy. In 2 Timothy, the book itself, the letter that Paul wrote, gives us insight into the answer to this question. And it's critical in understanding why the first century church may have thought or actually did think they were in the end times. At a minimum, that they were in the beginning of sorrows. And the question I ask as we go through this is it possible? Is it possible that the end times began then? 2 Timothy chapter 4, Paul writes an interesting thing in the letter here to Timothy. Remember, we finished Matthew 24, verses 1 through 14. We finished in verse 14 where it says, this gospel, the word, the truth, it will go out to all nations. Implying that we would be a part of that. Those disciples he was talking to, implying you're going to be a part of this in these times. Well, he does charge Timothy in a similar way. He says in verse 1 of 2 Timothy 4, I charge you therefore before God and the Lord Jesus Christ, who will judge the living and the dead at his appearing and his kingdom. So he says, I charge you. I challenge you. I'm laying it out on the line here, Timothy. This isn't a letter. Verse 2, preach the word. Preach it. Herald it. It probably has an exclamation point in your Bible, just like mine. Preach the word. Be ready. Be ready. In season and out of season. Be ready at all times. All times. Right now. Preach the word. He goes on, he says, convince, rebuke, exhort with all longsuffering and teaching. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but according to their own desires, because they have itching ears, they will heap up for themselves teachers. False teachings. Deception. You know, when you read in the New Testament, it's a story about apostates coming in, false teachers. You see, people in that era, in the first century of the church, they had to experience that. So Paul was saying, get ready. You know, the word for the phrase be ready is, that we read as be ready, is a episteme. It's a Greek word, and it means simply, I stand by. I stand at the ready. It also means, I am urgent. I am urgent. It also means there is something at hand. Something's going to happen. There's something impending. Paul was saying to Timothy, don't just preach the word, but be urgent about it. Feel the urgency. It's important. There's going to be a time soon when people won't even endure sound doctrine and teaching. I mean, if you think about people who need to be ready, doesn't a preacher need to be at the ready? If a preacher is up here or anywhere and he's not urgent, is he really doing his job? If there's not something that has a sense of urgency, that implies that we need what the Bible tells us. It's important. I need it now. Think of an EMT. They're urgent people. They have to always be ready because if an accident happens somewhere, they not only have to get there quickly, but they may not have much time to save that person who was in an accident. Think of a firefighter, and they get on that fire truck. They got to be ready. They got to be able to get there. They're urgent, because if they don't get that fire out, someone could die. That's what we in the church are like. We're urgent, because something could happen, and something could happen very, very quickly. Just like when someone gets in an accident, and they need the EMTs, just like when a fire breaks out and you need that firefighter to come and save you. Why would Paul in the first century church, in the first century brethren, our forefathers, have this sense of urgency? It appears they did. They were preached to have the urgency. Why would they have thought they were in the beginning of sorrows, the end times? You know, leading up to the writing of 2 Timothy, prior to that time, Paul himself, who wrote many of the letters in the epistles that we read, he had an imprisonment. We read about it in the last chapter of Acts. We're not going to go there. Paul was imprisoned. We read all about it in Acts 28, and that's where the book of Acts ends, Paul's first imprisonment. He was imprisoned twice. Now, the imprisonment he had that we read about in the book of Acts was in Rome, and it was basically a house arrest. He could have visitors. He could write letters to people. People could come and go, but he was under house arrest. He was in prison. We believe that that imprisonment happened probably at the earliest. It started in 60 AD, probably sometime between 60 and 62 or 63 AD. And from that imprisonment, Paul wrote some incredible documents. God inspired him to write information that means very much to us today. It was from there that he wrote the letter to the Ephesians, the church at Ephesus, the letter to Philippi, to the church in Philippi, I should say. He wrote what we know as Colossians, and he wrote a letter to a close personal friend, Philemon, while he was in prison. Paul probably wrote the first letter that he wrote to Timothy between 63 and 65 AD. That's when scholars believe he wrote it, after his first imprisonment. He was out. He got out of prison. The book of Acts, as I mentioned, ended with Paul's house arrest. But scholars and the teaching of the church point to the fact that the epistles that came later talked about him moving about. So we know he was let out of prison. But something happened in 64 AD. The emperor in Rome started to burn sections of Rome. Remember Rome burned? Maybe you remember that from history. The emperor Nero allegedly set sections of Rome on fire and it burned. But guess who he blamed? He blamed Christians. He blamed our brothers and sisters in Christ from that era. People like you and me that would come to church every week. And suddenly they were blamed for burning a city, the city of Rome. Imagine how you'd feel. Imagine what your brothers and sister in Christ felt like. And it started an era of persecution on Christians all over the Roman Empire. Nero began the campaign, and they actually believe that Peter was martyred during this time. Imagine what the people felt like. They started to hear of persecution. They started to experience it. People started getting killed. Peter got killed. He was martyred during this time. Remember what Jesus said? They will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. The beginning of sorrows. Many scholars believe that Paul began what is called his second imprisonment, which was not in Rome. It was in Caesarea around 64-65 AD. And it was different. It wasn't a house arrest. He was in prison. And in fact, many believe that Paul probably felt this was the end. And he wasn't all that wrong. While Paul was in prison in 66 AD, the first of a long series of what are called the Jewish Wars against the Roman Empire started. And starting in 66 and 67 AD, city of Jerusalem, there was rebellion. There were wars. Even if you didn't live in Jerusalem, you heard about the war going on between the Jews and the Romans. That was the first one. It was from 66 AD till 73 AD. Remember what Jesus said? He said, "You will hear of wars and rumors of wars. The beginning of sorrows. The end times." Why would have they believed that? We would have believed that. It was the end time, the beginning of sorrows. The second letter to Timothy probably was written by Paul from prison in the 66 or 67 AD time period. When all this was going on, Paul's seen it himself. And the second letter of Timothy has a different tone than the first. And again, being in prison, he probably saw his end near. And most scholars agree, almost down to a person. And we believe in the church that it's most likely that Paul himself was killed and martyred in 68 AD, a few years after Peter. And it was done under the orders and the rule of Nero. And finally, in 70 AD, after Paul had died, he had written all the letters he was going to write. The Romans finally got tired of the Jewish rebellion, and they actually destroyed Jerusalem. And they destroyed the temple. Imagine after all that, the Apostle Paul had been killed. Peter had been killed. Wars. Rumors of wars, and now the words Jesus said, "Not one stone will be standing of this temple," came true as a sign. I believe the beginning of sorrows started then. I believe the end times began when Christ came. He died. He was resurrected, and the first century church, our forefathers, it was born, and they experienced what Jesus Christ described as the beginning of sorrows. If that's the case, that's just my own personal conclusion. I don't expect you to agree with that. But if I'm here to say that the end times could have begun 2,000 years ago, why couldn't it go on another 2,000 years? And wouldn't that make you kind of say, well, maybe Christ is just going to delay his coming? Aren't you working against yourself, Corey? Why wouldn't you expect it to just go on and on and on? Your end times, man, they're going to be thousands of years. Well, we have to go back to Matthew 24. We don't need to turn there. But when we look at this phrase, the beginning of sorrows, actually what it means in the original language is the beginning of birth pangs. The beginning of birth pains or birth pangs. Go look it up. All people that translate the New Testament, all scholars, including the church, agree that the actual meaning is the beginning of birth pains. Birth pangs. The women in the audience here that have had children know what birth pangs are. Us men don't know. We saw it as we went through it with our wives, and we watched and we observed, and it was strange to us, but not to the women in this audience who have had children. You can call birth pains contractions. The women in here who have had children remember those times. They were dramatic. They've never gone through anything like it before or since. But yet it says the world, Jesus said, the world will go through birth pains. Birth pains. We can understand why the end time could have started back then if we understand what the Bible alludes to here. If we pull out of the Bible what it says. Think about birth pangs. I remember when Colleen went into labor with our oldest daughter, Emmy. It was in the morning, I believe. I believe it was on a Sunday. And she said, my water has broke. I think that was the case. See how much I remember? She remembers every detail of it. But here's what I remember. She had birth pangs. She had contractions, but they were very far apart. And all day that day, she worked. And then she'd have a contraction while she was working, a birth pang. And then she would go do the wash. And I'm like, well, honey, don't do that. No, let me do that because it just keeps my mind. I'm not ready to go in the hospital. It's not time. All day. I just thought, what's going on here? You know, the guy. But those birth pangs were far apart. You see, we have birth pangs in this world. Jesus described them, the beginning of sorrows. And over a long period of time, they have been happening, just like it happens for a woman. Birth pangs, contractions. And you all know what happens. And it's interesting is that when you look at the Greek and the meaning of these birth pangs, it means the pain of the childbirth, actually, the agony. The difficulty. Birth pangs are not easy. And I remember finally going to the hospital 8, 9, 10 hours later. The contractions, the birth pangs were closer together now. And then we got into the hospital and they got closer together. And the pain and the agony got more and more. To the point where the final pangs were pushing. They were pushing. And then Amira came. The mirror came out, but it was not easy. But there's no doubt that there was a process, and you women know this process well. The contractions, the pains start out this far apart, and they get like this, and they get like this, and they start coming faster and faster and faster and faster. And finally, it's climactic in that this baby comes. That is why the end times can be that long. Because it can start like this. Our forefathers in the first century went through the beginning of sorrows. They experienced people being killed like Christ said would happen. They experienced wars and rumors of wars. I don't know what they experienced in terms of natural disasters and all that. They experienced apostasy, false teachers, all throughout the early first century church. Who are we to say when those birth pangs don't start accelerating? Shorter amount of time. Closer, 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 closer. And in the end, it comes fast. It comes quickly. That's why we don't have to worry that the end times may have started then, and that somehow symbolizes that Christ delays his coming. Because the pangs, when they start to increase at a rate, and maybe we're seeing that now, we don't know how fast. But when they do, the analogy will hold true. Why is it dangerous if we fall into the trap of thinking he delays his coming? Let's go to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. I actually read this scripture during the feast in a little different context, but it certainly fits here. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. In verse 1, but concerning the times and the seasons, brethren, times and season being a reference to what Christ talked about in Matthew 24, what we read about in other prophecies, in Daniel, what we read about as things that will happen and occur prior to the end of the age, even before the great tribulation arrives. But concerning the times and seasons, brethren, you have no need that I should write to you. We don't have any need. We know what is to happen. The Bible tells us. We don't put a date on things. I'm not going to tell you when I think the great tribulation is going to come, because I have no clue. We don't put a date, but you don't need me to tell you, just like Paul said that. Verse 2, he says, for you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord, the time of the great tribulation ultimately, will come as a thief in the night. See, a thief comes quickly. You don't see them. They come, they take what they want at night, and it's over so fast. That's how the times and the seasons will end up. Birth pangs. Faster, faster, faster. To the point it could be like a thief in the night. Boom! They hit you. Verse 3, for when they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them as labor pains upon a pregnant woman. You see, the analogy flows through from what Jesus wrote to what Paul wrote. And they shall not escape. You see, there's a warning inherent in this. Don't say Christ delays his coming. Because the moment you do, might be the moment where it hits in a flurry. And things accelerate at a rate which you never thought. And if you're not careful, it can blow right by you. You won't be ready. Because you thought he delayed his coming. It's been 2,000 years, Corey, since the end times started. It's just all delayed. It's not how the Bible says it's going to work. It's going to hit hard and it's going to hit fast. Knowing that helps to create a sense of urgency. When we look at the times about us, around us, we don't have to say, we don't have to believe that Christ delays his coming. We can assume that when it hits, and it could be in our lifetime, it could hit fast. I asked the young ladies, I may have mentioned to you already, when they thought Christ would return. I think I did, and they said in their children's lifetime. But again, they were wise enough to say, but we don't know. We talked about that. We don't know. We don't know. I don't know whether we will get to the point of the Great Tribulation. We used to think it might be in 1972. We don't know when it is. But I don't know that I won't be alive when that time period hits. I don't know that I won't be whisked off to some place of safety. I don't know. I could be. I may not. I don't know if my kids will be. They very well could be. They may not. I don't know if my grandchildren will be. But when it happens, it will happen so fast. Just like those final birth pangs before a woman has a child. That creates a sense of urgency. It's not the only thing. Believe me, I'm giving one message here today on it. Just one. This is one aspect of having a sense of urgency. But it does start in our hearts and minds with knowing that Christ will not delay his coming. He can't. And he won't. We just need to simply be ready. Comes as a thief in the night. Let's go to Matthew 24. Matthew 24. And Jesus addresses a time after the beginning of sorrows, and we start to think about the time of the Great Tribulation, right before Christ returns. We can look at this even as a time before the time. Maybe it's the time we might go through right at the end when things speed up and we're like, is the Great Tribulation coming? Is it nearer than when we first thought? In verse 36, he says of Matthew 24, but of that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven. Christ can't delay his coming because he doesn't know. He says, but my Father only. Plus, Christ wouldn't want to delay his coming, I don't think. Do you? Verse 37, but as the days of Noah were, so also will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in the days before the flood they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered the ark, and did not know until the flood came and took them all away, so also will be the coming of the Son of Man. People will be unprepared. I'm sad for the people that left the Church of God, maybe because of that. And I don't mean the article, because we corrected all that. But maybe they were in the church because they thought Christ was going to come quickly and then he didn't. Then two men will be in the field, verse 40, one will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding at the mill, one will be taken and the other left. Watch therefore, you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. Verse 45, who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his master made ruler over his household to give them food in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he comes, will find so doing. Preach the gospel. Like Paul said to Timothy, preach the word. Be urgent. Do it. That's what I want. Be doing it. That's the ones that Jesus Christ is looking for. They're the ones that are going to be the faithful and wise servants. They have a sense of urgency. Verse 47, assuredly I say to you that he will make him ruler over all his goods. But if that evil servant says in his heart, my master is delaying his coming, and begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunkards, the master of that servant will come on a day when he is not looking for him and an hour that he's not aware of. A thief in the night. Let's go to 2 Timothy chapter 3. We'll close out here with a couple scriptures. Things will intensify in the end. Paul, when he wrote 2 Timothy, he talked and he wrote in a way, kind of understanding his time was short. He felt a sense of urgency and he tried to impart that to his good friend, his younger brother in the faith, Timothy. But in verse 1, he talks about a time that intensifies. 2 Timothy 3, verse 1. But know this, that in the last days, perilous times will come. Paul implies that yet, Timothy, there may be even yet more perilous times to come. Times that are needing urgency. When the birth pangs start to come closer and closer and closer together. The word for last in last days is the word that we get eschatology out of, eschatos. It means the last, the final, the last times, the final times. It means the furthest, the extreme end. Paul talks of a time to Timothy, and he describes what the world will be like. That's for a later message. He says, know this, these times will be perilous. When they hit, we will know. We don't know right now if we are heading right now into very perilous times. We could be. I'm not trying to scare anyone. We're not going to be scared into salvation, but we don't know. We're just asked to feel a sense of urgency and to be ready. Let's go to 2 Peter chapter 3. The exact same phrase was used before he died by Peter when he wrote his epistle. Imagine Peter, he died a few years before Paul. He was martyred. He was killed. But even he said, have a sense of urgency. 2 Peter 3 and verse 3, knowing this first, that scoffers will come in the last days. That term last days is the same term Paul used that we read. Last days. Here's what he said about those times that are right at the very end, the furthest extreme end of time before Christ returns. Scoffers will come, walking according to their own lusts, just like in the times of Noah, and saying, verse 4, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation. 2,000 years. Are you crazy, Corey? The end times has been going on that long? But even Peter knew before he died that there would be people who would fall into the trap thinking Christ delayed his coming. Where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, things continue as they were. Verse 5, for this they willfully forget, that by the word of God the heavens were of old, and the earth standing out of water and in water, by which the world that then existed perished with flooded with water. They forget what Jesus said. It'll be like the times of Noah. But the heavens and the earth, which are now preserved by the same word, are reserved for fire until the day of judgment and perdition of ungodly men. It's going to happen. It's going to be quick. Birth pangs. Are we ready? Are you ready? Am I ready? When we see what goes on in the world, and I've purposely stayed away from talking about all the bad things. You know the bad things. We talked about some of them this morning at our breakfast table. And these young ladies had some very, very interesting perspectives. Good perspectives. Are we ready? In conclusion, does Jesus Christ delay his coming? A rhetorical question. He doesn't because he can't. And he would never do it anyway. So I would say the answer is categorically no. In fact, as we talked about, it is very real and very possible that the beginning of sorrows, the beginning of the end times, at least as Christ's words were understood in the first century, began at that time. With his death, his resurrection, and the founding and operation of the early church. Your forefathers, mine, they've experienced it. It's real. They've experienced persecution, death, wars, rumors of wars, apostasy. We won't escape it necessarily. In fact, it could intensify for us before the end of the age. That creates a sense of urgency. We need a sense of urgency because, like birth pangs and going into labor, they always intensify and speed up when you get near to that birth. When you get near to the time when Christ will ultimately return and the kingdom comes. And imagine what those times will be like in the Great Tribulation right before. We need to have a sense of urgency because if we do not, and these end times do speed up, the birth pangs come more quickly, more rapid intervals, we could miss the signs of the times and the seasons. We could miss them. The same as a thief in a night coming, another analogy. Jesus Christ would never, ever delay his coming. God the Father won't delay his coming. He will come when he is ready. So we need to be ready and have a sense of urgency.